Okay. You didn't get written up, and I should have said something about it. But many of you know that Bill Edwards is down in Florida training right now. The word that we have is that Becky has gone down there to spend this weekend with him, and so she won't be here right now, but I think is still going to be able to do the things that keep us connected by email and things of that sort. I also wrote up here a list. Some of you may have seen this. Valerie Carter sent me a letter this week. I've been told this is the tip of the iceberg. This isn't the end of the list. But there are some opportunities for service through things that she's concerned with. Two of these have to do with either teaching or helping the directors of the English as a Second Language program. And then these others involve either leading devotionals or leading Bible study at a retirement home. In both cases, it's a commitment of once a month, once in the evening. The other one is usually in the morning. And then finally, there's something called the Bread Ministry. Some of you may have benefited from that when people visit the church for the first time. There's a group that makes fresh loaves of bread, homemade bread. Another group that matches up particular loaves of bread with particular visitors, and others who carry the loaf of bread to the visitors to welcome them and thank them for being there and make sure that if they have immediate questions, they're answered. And they need a couple of people to work in that. So if any of you have an interest in those, you can contact Valerie and check on that. Secondly, it's been bugging me for a little while. Somebody back in the Christmas period, realizing that I was going to be cleaning out the house where my mother and dad lived for 40 or 50 years, and knowing that my dad, as am I, is a chemist, asked me if I had found or if I might find a pocket protector. For some reason, they wanted it. If that was you, it has been bugging me that I've been carrying this thing around. It's brand new, never been used. Of course, it's so old it's starting to crack at a couple of places, but it has never been used. And it is a collector's item. It says on here, you can tell that this is from a different time and day. Used by men who know that neatness counts. Salesmen, office managers, accountants, draftsmen, college students, bank employees, route men. I was informed this morning by a number of people that if I had said route men, they would have known what I was talking about. And I realized that people in Virginia say hoose and route, and people in East Tennessee say house and route. But route men, so I don't know, there may not be very many people in this group old enough to know what a route or a route man is. And then finally, executives. So those of you who fit into one of those categories, this is just what you need. And I would like to have this in the hands of whoever is asking for it.
Does it come with a set against your notes?
No. But we can arrange that, I think, if we need to. Okay. I'd like to start this morning by having you turn to Galatians chapter 5. In the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Acts and Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and then there it is, Galatians, you should find chapter 5. Chapter 5. Verse 16. Instead, I tell you, that's a signal that Paul has been saying a whole bunch of things, and now he's saying something that stands in contrast to what he'd said before. Instead, I tell you, be guided by the Spirit, and you will no longer yield to, the word he uses in my translation, self-indulgence. In verse 19, he begins to describe some of the things that will likely enter your life if self-indulgence is what's in control of your life. And in verse 22, he begins a list of things that have a chance of entering your life if the Spirit is in control of your life. If you're influenced by the Spirit as opposed to influenced by what my translation calls self-indulgence. Let me read that list in two different forms. One is my translation. On the other hand, verse 22 says, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace, patience, kindness, and goodness, trustfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And it goes on to add, they don't write laws to deal with these things. Another version of that list is the one we're actually going to follow. And so now let me, for those of you who may be visiting with us, we have been working through lists in the Bible. We're in the biggest one that we've tackled before. These are lists of characteristics that Jesus has that the Spirit wants us to develop in our lives. And we have been working through a list out of James 3:17. That's the list that you see over here. And this morning we're coming to the last word in that list. The next part that we follow, it's still the same thing, is we're going to move to this list. I'm working from some information in a workbook prepared originally by T.W. Hunt with the help of Claude King. And in that book, they move to the fruit of the Spirit as the second part of this. We're going to continue to do the same kinds of things, but just on that. And the words, as T.W. Hunt uses them, that's the way we will use them, although we may find some synonyms. Love, joy, and peace, the first three are the same. The second three, it sort of looks like some things have moved around a bit from my translation. Long-suffering, gentleness, and goodness. And then the last three, faith, meekness, and temperance. So those are the words that we will move to next. So what's the word we're going to deal with next week? Next week. Love. Okay? So that's where we are. And today, we're going to work on the word honest as a descriptor of Jesus. And let me remind you, for those of you who've been with us for a while, and let me tell you if you're new with us today. The way we're going to work on this is we're going to look for synonyms of this word to help us understand that character trait. But we've got to recognize that what is happening in the spiritual battles that take place is we're being pulled by Satan away from the characteristic that's described by those words to something which is the opposite of that. And so we're going to try to track what that is. But if Satan isn't successful at pulling us off to the opposite, then what Satan may try to do, the other trick, is to push us beyond where that is into a perversion of that word. And so we're going to look at the perversions that might be there. We're stealing from T.W. Hunt as we do so, but very often folks may bring in a few extra things as well. Okay, so that's the work we're going to be doing today. Let's look for synonyms. Honest. What are other words that might describe that same trait?
Truthful.
Truthful. Up front. Other words?
Transparent.
Transparent.
Forthcoming.
Not forthcoming, but forthcoming.
Direct.
Ethical.
Ethical.
Integrity.
Integrity. Direct, ethical, integrity. What other words might come to your mind?
Straightforward.
Straightforward. Any other words come to mind?
Forbearing.
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 I think that might have fit better with some of the other terms we've put, but I've been taught that if you offer one, I need to put it down. Is there an E?
Bear.
And it's bear like bear in the woods.
Right.
Or bear.
It's not up here yet.
Should be, shouldn't it? Somebody suggested one in the first hour that T.W. Hunt didn't have on his list and I hadn't thought about before. But the moment I heard the word, I realized I'd actually seen something like that the day before. The word was undistorted. I'd gone out to go shopping with my wife. We were in her car. We pulled up behind the car and I realized as we were pulling up, it was a Florida license plate that I had not seen that style before. I was curious to see what it said. And so I went to look, and I couldn't read it, because the bottom 3 inches of her windshield had enough distortions in it, I couldn't read it. Does your windshield have a distortion in it? Have you all ever spotted that? You're driving down the road, and suddenly you're doing like this to try to change your view, and you realize the road is rippling at that one spot. Have you ever had that experience? Hopefully it's not in the center of your vision. Hopefully it's off to the side someplace. Like this one was way down low where it doesn't relate to anything. But undistorted seemed like to me to be a good word to put on this. And as we talked about it, this person sort of took it a little further. He said, I really meant two things by that. One is that when people look at you, they don't see distortions. But when you look at other things, your vision is not distorted either. I thought that was a nice thing to add to that thought. Okay. What else?
Upright.
Upright. Stand up kind of guy, I've heard somebody say.
Open.
Probably should have put that word close to transparent, should I? Some of you who know a little bit about the Bible may get this one. It's not a big deal if you don't. But there was one of Jesus' disciples about whom Jesus made a very, very interesting comment. The guy was Nathanael. Remember what he said about him?
Here's a man with no guile.
Here's an Israelite in whom there is no guile. That seemed to me to be a nice little phrase. Guileless would be another way to say that, but good word. Let me see if we've left that. Yeah, there's one fairly big one that I put up here. This is stolen from P.W. Hunt, but I think it's pretty straightforward. One is without hypocrisy. And then at this point, we had a short discussion of whether the last two letters should be CY or SY. Would anyone care to weigh in on that? That's what I thought. They didn't like that. I'll use SY in here. That seemed to be the preponderance of opinion. And the other word was sincere. Do you email? Do you guys use email a lot? Okay. Does your email program have the ability to put a signature on your email?
Mm-hmm.
They're not signatures, are they?
Mm-hmm.
What are they? They call it, my email program calls it a signature, but it's not a signature. What is it? It's a block of text that's appended to the end of whatever you write. And after a while, you forget it's there. Your recipients understand it's there, but you don't. Have you looked at the signatures that people put down? You get an email from somebody, and here's a signature, and it takes 8 lines to tell you all of who they are. And then there's a blank line, and then there's a quotation of some kind. Perhaps the quotation goes on for another 3 or 4 lines. Right? What's your reaction the first time you see that? You read the quotation, and you say, oh, that's interesting. And then the second time, you read the quotation, and you say, yeah, okay, that's still interesting. And the 19th time you read that, what do you think? Why are they doing this to me? And of course, they don't know they're doing it to you because they put it in their signature. They forgot it's in there. They don't know that they're sending this to you all the time. Well, I sort of thought I need to do this. And so back last year, I only did it for about a week, and I finally decided that I hadn't really picked the best quotation. This is true. I put a quotation down. I got an interesting comment about it because the quotation said, the most important virtue to develop is sincerity. When you can fake that, you've got it made. Think it through. That's sort of a picture of where the world is. The idea of faking sincerity, I thought that was so funny. I thought that was hilarious. Nobody else seemed to think it was very funny. You are reacting about the way most of my... I took it off, but... The idea of faking sincerity as a means of getting ahead, it just struck me as hilarious. There are other things that strike me as hilarious. I will not share those with you again.
You
gotta
get
cameras
to appreciate that.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. What are some opposites?
Dishonest.
Deceitful.
D-G-C-E-I-T. And I think we're going to have to... This is not Valerie Carter's this item. Valerie Carter has the options to say we're going to move over here. This is not the Crooks and their daughter are this item. I think does anybody know who Kai Che is?
Uh-oh.
Kai Che?
Yeah.
I don't know. So.
What language is that?
I don't know. He could be Armenian or Russian.
Not Armenian.
Yeah,
it's not Russian.
I didn't think so. It's teenage. Yeah. Well, I know what cup chain means. That I know. Anyway, let's stay on this. What are the opposites? Satan says, I don't want God's children to have these characteristics. I'm going to pull them over here.
That comes to mind. Hidden agenda.
A lot of uns or ins. Indirect.
Yeah.
Truthful.
Manipulative? Okay. Disingenuous?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I had practiced that one. Yeah. Somebody said one of the big ones just a second ago, I think. Lying or liar. That's one of the big ones that's on this list. What else?
Speaking out of two sides of your mouth.
Okay. In the first hour, duplicitous.
D-U-P-L-I-C-I-T.
Somebody in the first hour picked up on that one, and they said the Native Americans used to have a phrase for that. Speaking out of both sides of the mouth at once, Native Americans just went right to the center and talked about speaking with a forked tongue, right? So,
more. I think of a song that.
Don't you though?
Yeah,
don't
but
you
I
though?
Forked tongue is more evil than
the duplicitous. So there's shades to this, right?
Degree.
Okay. Both sides, .. You were saying something different, I think.
What? I just said untrustworthy.
Yeah. So I was back on this. I'm trying to go there. Nobody didn't want to go with me. Untrustworthy. Unethical,
indirect.
Well, indirect isn't quite as bad as undirect, and undirect isn't a word that I remember from my
distorted.
Yeah, distorted. Insincere. And then some more uns.
So, un, he was lacking. Lacking
grace,
lacking sincerity.
Cagey. I like that one. C-A-G-E-Y.
Sneaky.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
Slick.
Slick. Uh-huh.
Slick.
Well, it's really interesting. The way T.W. Hunt approaches the perversions, they stand in stark contrast to that. They really do. They stand in stark contrast to that. And I'm not sure I've finished thinking through the kind of division that he's using. And I have a point of view to sort of help you if you get caught up in turmoil over that. Let me add a couple that he's put down. Unscrupulous, there's another one we can mend with an O-U-S. Counterfeit, which I thought was good. Fake, which was even better, maybe. Fraudulent, which was good. Scheming, which I thought captured some things. Okay? Now.
Well, how about no boundaries?
Yeah, it sort of fits with some things you talked about this morning, doesn't it?
Boundless. You look at the words under us.
Maybe we should say recognizing no boundaries or recognizing no boundaries for yourself. Sometimes that sneaks in too. Let me give you the first three over here on this list. This is from T.W. Hunt. I want you to watch the contrast that happens between these two. And I think the way to see these is not to see these as themselves, but to see them as adjectives for this word honest. Brutal, cruel, and callous. There's a way to be honest that's brutal. There's a way to be honest that's cruel. There's a way to be honest that's callous. Yeah, you're honest, but what you're doing is so unhelpful. And I think that's what T.W. Hunt, by looking, just analyzing the words, that's what he's picking up. This over here is really leaving honesty. That's still holding on to honesty, but with a cold grip of death to it. And it's got a very different sense to it. Yes, sir.
You know, earlier you were talking about some terms, whether it was the hero or the sayer. Those are all the person being honest. I think of the person hearing someone, and a perversion, I think, would be naivety and naive.
I'll just spell this and let the other version. Yeah, maybe so. What else? Let me do something with that that you can criticize if you like. I'm going to lay that one on the line.
Yeah, I have a hard time.
Because I think every once in a while we need to remind ourselves that there are ways to edge up to this, mm-hmm. and you almost have to sometimes. The question is whether you can. The story of the Super Bowl was a wonderful little story. Did you guys see that interception?
Yeah.
I don't believe there was a blade of grass separating him from being out of bounds. At least on two times when he put his feet down, if not four. And yet, he wasn't. And you know, maybe. Somebody said, there's a word that he used I didn't give you. For this column, they said candid. And so he said, boy, that sounds like that ought to be over here. And I thought, well, maybe that's another one that... You know, if you don't do this one right, you can find yourself edging into this. But if you don't do this, you may find yourself encouraging something different.
Sometimes it's good to be blunt, and sometimes maybe not.
Sometimes it's necessary.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me pause for just a minute. There's two points that he made that I think are worth repeating, and I'm going to give them out of order from the first hour. One of the points he made was hiding or standing in this. In terms of honesty, is often a place or a person, a place to be honest, a time to be honest, or a person with whom to be honest. And a word for that could be, for that last part, confrontation. And the question is, if you recognize when confrontation is needed, sometimes the process of confrontation can require stepping towards that. And it's a matter of how, if you do confrontation in a way that's loving, in a way that's grieving almost. You know, there are some things that have to be said, and I wish to God I didn't have to say them. But they have to be said. That's very different from, I'm saying these things, and I'm enjoying saying these things because I want to see you squirm. Or you've hurt me, and so now I'm going to hurt you by using truth as a club. I think that's one of the things he talked about as a point to watch out for in here, if you're looking at where that virtue really is. There are times when Jesus said some things that were very hard, and sometimes he said those things pretty bluntly. Woe to those, he said seven times at the tail end of one of the Gospels. And the points that he was making weren't very nice. Why was he doing that? That might have been the only way to get those folks to listen to him. And yet, at the same time, he never crossed the line into this. What else seems to fall into that for you, Bobby?
Well, I was thinking about the word thoughtless, because in terms of what you were just explaining, it would be thoughtful. You know, when you consider very carefully when you're honest and when you're...
Well, then maybe in that sense, and this would not be one that is a full synonym, but one would be a characteristic of this column, and then its opposite would be... Maybe that's the way to say that. Way back there in the back.
Argumentative.
Uh-huh. What about pious?
pious, and I think self-righteous needs to go up there as well. But those, again, I think would be people who would be this are probably that because some of this has to their attitude. If you ever see a problem and try to solve it with the attitude of, well, I'd never be caught up in that kind of stuff, but probably you're not going to do that work of trying to address the problem particularly well, because you're going to risk being falling over into those areas. Yeah, where would that go? Where's a proper place for that? Luckily, tolerance is one of the words we get in his list in this next section, so we can explore that a little bit more then. There's a sense, I think, in which, what was the first term you used?
Compromise.
I think that might go over here, as opposed to aversion. I think that might go over here. But I think you might recognize, again, there's a line that sort of falls down through there. That maybe those terms could fall on either side of the line depending on how the thought or the work is applied.
How about political?
I didn't want to go with that word. I will say, however, if you read the Richmond Times-Dispatch, there was a fascinating editorial column this week. My blood pressure usually goes up when I read the left side. And it usually stays more or less even on the right side because I sort of know what I'm in for when I read the right side. You know how they have, what, three or four columnists that will appear on the right-hand side? One of those, I don't remember who it was, I believe it was at the bottom of the page. Those of you who are psychology-oriented, I'm looking for the up and right, so I'm reviewing visual memory. You do know this, right? You ask somebody a question, they break eye contact. The direction they break eye contact gives you clues to what they're doing and they're thinking, whether they're remembering something they've seen or something they've heard, or trying to make up a lie. This is one of the ways you can do it. Anyway, I was breaking up this way, so that must be where visual is. But what it said was, the columnist said, I caught three congressmen in moments of, and then he had a four-letter acronym for it. And what he was saying was, for politicians to function in our country today, we the people have put them in a position where they have to be absolutely sure about everything they say. They cannot ever say anything that they're not absolutely sure of. And he caught them in a moment where they admitted they really didn't know for sure about some things. They were undecided about something, didn't know. And the person was saying it was the most refreshing moment I'd ever seen. It didn't last very long, and it can't happen in public the way our climate is. We've done that as people. We've tolerated or accepted, I've just used your other word, we've accepted this kind of, my gosh, everything I say is absolutely right and all of my opponents are absolutely wrong, as opposed to, you know, we're all infallible folks, can we work together to see where truth is? So, to me, these are tough words, because I think if we're not in a position of having God's insight into everything, we're going to have to admit we might not have all of truth, and we might need to partner with somebody else to get a little bit more than we have. And so those words become words that take me into a complicated place. And I think to add the word political to that invites just too much turmoil and such. But I will tell you back over here that the word indifferent was one that he put down. Indifferent. Which again, okay, so what if that's the case? I don't care. And spiteful came in. Ruthless made me think about you all. I'm sorry, I just did that. Vicious was another word that came in.
How about malicious?
Malicious, I think, would fit.
Yeah,
malicious implies I've got some truth and now I'm going to use it to hurt you.
What was that? Somebody told me that.
Judgmental,
yes.
Do we add any today or do we not add any today?
No.
Relax. I keep hoping. Yeah. And it seems to me that these two terms are connected with that. Okay. Now, let me go to the other point that T.W. Kent made, which I think may be more important than the first one. Honesty requires honesty from the first. truth requires truth through and through.
You believe that? Is that true?
Say it again.
Honesty requires honesty from the first. If you're going to be honest, you better be honest from the first. If you're going to be truthful, you've got to be truthful through and through. Why is that true? Why is that true? An image came to my mind, which again shows you how weird my thinking is sometimes. PBS has now begun a Christmas tradition of showing the movie Christmas Story over and over and over again for 24 hours in the Christmas time. That movie has already come to my mind this morning once, because in the sermon, the pastor didn't realize he was referring to it, but he referred to it. Did you catch that point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the triple dog there. Don't leave it here, don't leave it here. Recess bell is over, I'm sorry. Well, there's another moment where Ralphie decided the only way he's going to get his BB gun is get Santa Claus to cooperate. He goes up, tells Santa Claus he wants the BB gun, and Santa Claus says the obligatory,
you
shoot your eye out, kid, and kicks him down the slide. Right? You remember what Ralphie does at that point? Pushes out his arms and stops and laboriously climbs his way back up. Okay? Now, that's all I need is that little image. If you're not honest and truthful from the first and all the way through, it puts you on a path that it's real hard to come back from. It's real hard to recover from. And that little image is maybe a funny way to think about that. So, if you've been to church this morning, you've already been, right? What do you do if you've lived a life where you haven't been honest? What do you do if you've lived a life where you haven't been truthful all the time? What do you do then? You start now. From here on. And I think you need to hear that in this context. We've got a little bit of time left. Maybe not as much. That clock's actually working again. I've got to get a new battery in here. See if you can find... You found Galatians, right? Okay. Can you find the next book, which is Ephesians? Find Ephesians chapter 4. And tell me what the first few words are.
I beg you.
More words.
I am a prisoner here in jail for serving the Lord.
This is verse 15 in chapter 4, right? I must not have told you. Sorry. Let's start over again. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15. First phrase or first few words. What does it say? Speaking the truth in love at all times. My translation says, if we live by the truth and in love, and without that tag-on phrase, you move yourself over to that other column, or at least T.W. Hunt has sort of given us insight into what that looks like. If we live by truth and in love, then some things happen. And if you've been with us for a little while, you've heard me refer to these verses. If you haven't been with us for a while, and you start coming, you'll hear this more than once. These may be among the most important verses in the whole of the New Testament. If we live by the truth and in love, if we speak the truth in love, we will grow completely into Christ, who is the head, by whom the whole body is, my translation, fitted and joined together. Every joint adding its own strength for each individual part to work according to its function, so that the body grows until it's built itself up in love. The word body there ought to be understood as the body of believers that's on this earth. Individual parts have functions, but individual parts without connections to others don't make a body. For the individual parts to function as they do, they need to be connected. And the connections are built on speaking the truth in love. Mine says, fitted and joined together. What holds the bones in the body together? Well, there's a whole bunch of different words you could throw out at this point. Ligaments, there's one. Muscles, there's another.
Sinew.
I love that word. Cartilage, right? These are the things that, that set themselves in between bones, like cartilage, or that provide connections between bones, or provide the ability to move one part next to another part, right? Now, looking just at that, if all you've got is a leg bone, you don't have a body. If we had all the body, all the bones, and all the skin, and none of these other things, what would we do? We would just jelly-filled mass that has these hard things in it, right? What makes the body is the connections. If the parts are going to function, they need to be connected to the other parts and working together. The connections are the relationships we build. And if we try to build those relationships on anything else except honesty, and honesty expressed in the context of love, it's not going to work. But if we do that, then what we're going to have is something the world hasn't seen very much of. The body of Christ on earth function. What are we going to talk about next week? Why did I tell you that ahead of time? So that when this time came, you will know what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to connect the end of this one into the first of the next one. Because these things are so connected. Okay, you found Ephesians. Go one more book. That's Philippians, right?
Yeah.
Chapter 1.
That's
yes.
Interesting with that. I think the tendons and the ligaments are one of the hardest things to heal, too. Like, you know, you break a bone, your bone is there, it's the thing is numb and heals, but if you have a really bad tendon or ligament injury, it's hard to heal.
I'm going to just pause a minute. Because there's something going on here that you guys need to know.
Was it a year ago this week?
Did he call me? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pat.
I had a heart. This stool is up here because a year ago I could hardly walk. And the day that that happened, I leaned over to pick up a sock. My back went out. And I was in unbelievable pain. I called the health line, and I got this woman, and I did not know who that woman was, frankly. She didn't tell me, "Hi, Bill, this is Teresa." She just answered my questions, and we sort of worked from there. They are hard to heal. They are hard to heal. I'm having twinges again this week, and starting before 8. If I'd only done my exercises the last year, but only followed my diet the last year,
and how much better I'd be.
But let me just spend a minute. It's the tendons, the connections that are harder to heal. If you're picking up this metaphor that I think Paul is giving us, that these represent, in a spiritual model anyway, the relationships between people, how easy it is to hurt them, how hard they are to heal. Okay. How do you make them strong? Honesty. How do you damage them? One moment of dishonesty. One moment of letting it up now.
Well, the thing I keep thinking about with this is, okay, if the girl comes downstairs and she says, "Honey, shut up, fat in this." From the beginning, he may end up being a little cruel, but he may help save her from embarrassment for the girl. Who should wear that?
There would have to be a really strong and good relationship.
Right.
To be able to go that, to be honest to those.
If she's honest to herself, she wouldn't have to ask others to, though.
Right. And she really wanted to know.
That's actually good. It makes a problem off to another place.
But as far as being truthful from the beginning, where the other word that we said, honest, what was the other word? Truthful from the beginning.
Yeah.
But what was the other thing?
Honesty. You don't have to remember but one story if you tell the truth.
Yeah. Okay. We were going for Philippians, right? Philippians chapter 1, right? Philippians chapter 1, verse 9. Let me start at verse 9. Let me start reading at various points. I'll stop for a minute. If you've got a variation on the term or word, we'll try to get those at that point. It is my prayer for you that your love for one another may grow more and more along with the knowledge and complete understanding that will help you come to true discernment. What does your say if it's got another word in place of discernment?
Judgment.
Okay. I like discernment there. What's the next two words? My translation, the next two words are so that. Does yours have that?
That you may.
That you may. Okay, so that you may, mine says so that. My prayer is that your love for one another, he's speaking to people who are God's children in one place, kind of like us, that your love for one another may grow more and more along with the knowledge and complete understanding that will help you come to true discernment so that you will be innocent. What does yours say? Pure. Blameless. Is there another one? And free of any trace of guilt when the day of Christ comes. Entirely filled with the fruits of uprightness through Jesus Christ. For the glory and praise of God. There is an astounding statement that comes out of the mouth of Job in the Old Testament. Job has these calamities come on him. His friends gather, and after an appropriate period of silence lasting 7 days, they say to him, you know, nobody has all these horrible things happen to him if he hasn't got a whole lot of sin in his life. You need to repent, confess. Job makes an astounding statement. He says, I have no sin. Did that mean, is it possible that could have meant that Job said, I've never sinned in my life? That's not possible. So what did he mean? At that point in his life, as best he knew, everything that was sinful in his life, he had dealt with God. And what does that give him? Did you see it? It gives him innocence. That's another word I think could be put up here. Because along with honesty, I think Ellen just expressed it pretty well. You only have to remember one story. So that you will be innocent and free of any trace of guilt when the day of Christ comes. Let's go back to Ephesians. Still in chapter 4. See if you can find verse 25. Verse 25 in Ephesians chapter 4 gives you a negative version and then gives a positive version. And it's the same thought both places. What's the first thought?
Stop lying.
Stop lying. Mine says no more lying. No more lies. No more falsehood. Okay. Now what's the positive? Speak the truth with your neighbor. Speak the truth to one another. Since we're all parts one of another. Since we're all parts one of another. Now, I want to take you to another place. Toward the end of the Bible, there are two large books, and in between are a bunch of little books. The big book at the end is Revelation. Most everybody can find that. The big book shortly before that is Hebrews. And in between are a bunch of little books. Hebrews, James, 1 Peter. I want you to find 1 Peter. See if you can find 1 Peter. Hebrews, James, 1 Peter. Chapter 2. 1 Peter, chapter 2. I want to start in verse 11. I want to take you to verse 12. Verse 11 first. I urge you, my dear friends, as strangers and nomads. Strangers and nomads. What people would that describe? It's people who don't have a home here. My home is somewhere else, the book of Hebrews says. I urge you, my dear friends, as strangers and nomads, to keep yourselves free from the, my translation, disordered natural inclinations that attack the soul. What does yours say of that phrase? Sinful desires. Mine says that attack the soul. What does yours say? That are at war against what? How does it work?
Your soul.
Okay. Now, verse 12. Always behave honorably. I would urge you to consider that probably means with honesty, with transparency, with openness, without guile. always behave honorably among. My translation says Gentiles. One translation says pagans. A softer but probably very accurate word would be unbelievers. I think that's a good word for us for today. Always behave honorably among Gentiles. My next two words are so that. In order that certain consequences, certain outcomes will come. Ready? What's the first outcome? So that, one, they can see for themselves what moral lives you live. And then, two, when the day of reckoning comes, give thanks to God for the things which now make them denounce you as criminals. Unbelievers tend to criticize believers. Live in such a way that what they criticize you for will someday turn into not praise to you. Did you notice that? Not praise to you. Praise to whom? Thanks to whom? Thanks to God. Isn't there an interesting corollary? There's connections almost every week of one kind or another. Now, why would they give thanks to God when the judgment day comes?
Hoping to get into heaven.
No, I don't think so. I think it's more than that. I think they've been saved, and they were saved because of the lives that you lived. Live in such a way that even if people criticize you, what they're criticizing you for are the very things that have a chance of saving their souls. Because it's through the conflict. You know, I'm sitting here criticizing this person, but the truth is, this person has been nothing but honest, truthful, open, and transparent with me. I understand where this person is coming from. They haven't been cruel. They haven't been indifferent. They've walked a tightrope in front of me, and I've criticized them for it. But the day came when I suddenly realized they had something I didn't have, and when I went to find it, I found the Lord. And on the day of judgment, they give thanks to God for you, for the things that make them denounce you now. Jesus said there was a narrow way, and the narrow way means you can fall off this way, you can fall off that way. Satan wants to pull you off on this side. If that doesn't work, he's going to try to push you off on the other side. There's a tightrope right down the middle. And that tightrope is where Jesus was and where he calls us to be. Next week we start the fruits of the Spirit. Travis preached a sermon series on this, and it wasn't that long ago, and I'm not Travis, but we'll do what we can. Do a little work. I think, Helen, you said you had bought two of these workbooks and has one, so if somebody hasn't had time to get to Lifeway and wants one, Helen picked up two just in case somebody wanted to save themselves a trip. Okay? Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Now, Father, we thank you for the time you give us, and we thank you that you have given us the gift of your Spirit who enables us to do things we can never do on our own, including being more like your Son. Teach us to recognize all the things that your Son lived out before us, and help us begin to mimic that and mirror that in our lives. We pray this in your Son's name. Amen.